Okay. Good evening and welcome to the Kitsap County County Planning Commission meeting for December 7th. Thank you for participating with our government tonight. We do have some guidelines. When there is public testimony to be given, we ask that the internet users use your little hand at the bottom of your screen to indicate that you would like to speak. Once you're recognized, the sound will be unmuted, and we ask that all the speakers give their names and approximate location that they live. For call-in users, you use *9 on your keypad to indicate that you would like to speak. When the last four digits of your call-in number are called, the sound will be unmuted, and then you can begin with your first and last name before speaking. Let's see, it may be necessary for call-in users to use *6 to unmute their phones. On normal public comment, we are limiting speak to 2 minutes. And we do accept written comments that have been submitted prior to the meeting. Usually that is presented to a staff member or email to our clerk by 2 p.m. the day prior. And those comments are read during the meeting and are limited to the 2 minute time period. With that, we will do our introductions. Let's begin at Central.
Alan Beam, Central Kitsap.
Okay.
Stephen Bowe, Central Kitsap.
Okay.
Mike Eliason, Central Kitsap.
Right. And then South.
Stacy Smith, representing South Kitsap.
Okay.
Danielle Douthit, South Kitsap.
Okay, thank you. And North. Well, I'll
Amy
begin.
Mall North.
Okay.
Sorry. Amy Mall, North Kitsap.
All right.
Aaron Murphy, North Kitsap.
And Joe Phillips, North Kitsap. All right. With that, do we have a motion for adoption of the agenda?
I move to approve adoption of the agenda.
Okay. Do I have a second?
Second.
Commissioner Bean, thank you. Okay, and as should be noted, we don't have any minutes for approval tonight. So that'll be minus that. All those in favor of the minutes or the agenda to be approved, raise your hand, say aye.
Aye.
One, two, three. Yep, unanimous. Thank you. All right, skipping over the adoption of minutes, we have our first general public comment period. Let's see, do we have anybody that wishes to? Yes, Mr. Palmer.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, I'm concerned that we're wasting time on this non-motorized vehicle, electric vehicle work program and ordinance. It seems to me that there's much more pressing issues relative to the comprehensive plan and site-specific amendments. I've got clients who have been waiting at least 3 years to submit a site-specific plan amendment. Two of them are already in the urban growth area and want to upgrade density, but they can't because the county won't do it. And here you are wasting time on an ordinance that we don't really need. We adopted a bicycle plan in 2011, and we don't need the electric vehicle stuff because of people that own businesses want to promote that. They just do it. And there are several instances where that's just the case. We don't need to be offering them any incentives. There's incentive enough. So why bother doing this when we've got these other issues that the county can't seem to get to. So I'm concerned about that. And I guess we'll have to submit our comments to that effect in writing, but why are we doing this?
Okay. All right. Thank you for your comments, Mr. Palmer. Do we have any other comments? I don't see anybody there. Okay. Then we will close this general public comment period and move to our public hearing for the open space application. And Colin?
Yep.
Yep. You're up.
Great, sounds good, thank you. Yeah, I'm here today just to do a brief overview and presentation for one open space application. I'll go over a little bit about what the application, about the site and the proposal itself, and also a little background on our open space program and where we are in the process for this application. So I'm gonna go ahead and share my screen, or Amanda, do you need to do that for me?
Nope, you should be able to.
Oh, I see, okay.
If it's fighting with you, let me know.
Okay, I'm gonna just do a screen share just to go through this presentation. And then afterwards, I'm definitely here to answer any remaining questions. Okay, so again, my name is Colin Poff. I'm a planner with the county. I was lead reviewer on this open space application. We often might have one, two, or maybe three applications in a year. Typically, they'd be reviewed together, presented together towards the end of the year around this time. We only have one this year, so we'll just be presenting the one. It's the Desormier Open Space project number 20-06087. And I have the proposal here. They propose to transfer approximately 3.17 acres of land, or 42% of the overall site, currently designated as single family residence by the Kitsap County Assessor, to current use open space. The parcel is approximately 7.53 acres and is developed with a single family residence and detached garage. So basically this is an existing site that's developed with a home and garage, and they propose to take a portion of that site, 3.17 acres, and have it assessed differently, have it assessed from its current current assessment of single family residence to the actual current use of open space, with the intent to lower the taxable value on that part of the property. So this property is located in a rural area, not far from Central Valley Road, there to the northeast of Silverdale. It's actually in North Kitsap Commissioner District Number 1. So a little bit of background again on the Open Space Taxation Act. This is a state program that we're implementing here at the county. It started in the 1970s and allows property owners to have their open space, or their farm and agricultural land, or timberlands valued at the current use rather than the highest and best use. And so that is the purpose of the state program. And the RCW actually has many definitions of what open space actually is. Many of those relate to conserving or maintaining scenic and natural resources, or they relate to protecting streams and water supply or water quality, things of that nature. So we implement this program, the state program, in Kitsap County Code, Chapter 1812. And I'll just read quickly the purpose statement there in our code. It says that the open space program is to maintain, preserve, conserve, or otherwise continue in existence adequate open space lands, and to assure the use and enjoyment of natural resources and scenic beauty for the economic and social well-being of the state and its citizens. So this is the purpose of Chapter 1812. And like I said, we typically get a couple of these a year that we consider. And so going over this one specifically, just the process. This is a type 4 process, meaning that it's reviewed under our requirements by staff, presented to the Planning Commission, and then it would go by recommendation from the Planning Commission to the Board of County Commissioners. So we reviewed this. It had a notice of application June 29th. We issued another one on November 3rd to clarify the process, the type 4 process, and make that accurate. So there were a couple of opportunities for public comment that we didn't receive any comments on this one. If you recall, we did a work study on this on November 16th with largely the same presentation, and we're here for the hearing. The next step would be the Board of County Commissioners at the next available opportunity. It should be noted that, like I said, we review these at the end of the year, and we need to, if possible, have it adopted by the end of the year in order for it to take effect for next tax year. If it carries over into January into the next year, it wouldn't take effect until the following year. So there is a little bit of a potential deadline here to be aware of. So here's the site. Again, this is in a rural residential zone. This is the applicant's property. The existing improvements there are a driveway, home, garage, and septic system, and that would be in the cleared area of the parcel. So what's hatched there on the site is that 3.12 acres that's proposed to be designated as open space. And that more or less corresponds with mature vegetation, you know, the not cleared area on the property, as well as adjacent to some critical areas. You'll notice there's a man-made pond there, which is considered a wetland, although not regulated as a wetland the same way that other wetlands might. But so there's an on-site pond and some other features that I'll describe here in a moment. And that corresponds with the aerial view here. You can see the existing improvements on the site. You can see the mature vegetation, heavily forested area there, corresponding with the area that would be designated as open space, as well as the man-made wetland there. Again, this is in a rural area, so it's surrounded by rural residential zoning. So that's the character of the general vicinity there. And then this is our critical areas map. And they have some features to know: the man-made pond. Also, the green shows hydric soils, so potential wetlands in the area. There's an off-site stream. That dotted black line is a type N stream. And the orange is actually a critical aquifer recharge area. And so this was also corroborated with a wetland certificate that they submitted that did show that on-site feature as well as the off-site stream and wetland that may have some impact from their buffers onto the site. But essentially it does have streams and wetlands in the vicinity, has that critical aquifer recharge area and that mature vegetation. So that brings me to the next slide. Essentially for what the request actually is in the tax reduction, our code allows for a 50% to a 90% reduction in tax value of that land, depending on what features are there. So there's a minimum criteria, and if you meet that minimum criteria, you could propose or you could apply for that 50% reduction. So the minimum criteria is to have at least two priority resources. So I've listed a couple here, wetlands, ponds, and streams, or watersheds and aquifer recharge area, which are present on the site. And down and more in the low priority resources, preservation of visual quality, which would relate to the rural aesthetic or character of the area, and the forested nature of the property. So based on that, it does meet the minimum criteria for that 50% reduction. And based on that, we asked for a tax shift from the assessor ahead of time, and that would approximate their tax reduction by approximately $345 a year. So that is what we're looking at here. And based on that, we find that it meets our Chapter 1812 part of our code and recommend that the Planning Commission would recommend approval to the Board of County Commissioners. Again, I would note that this is something that, if possible, could be done by the end of the year in order for it to take effect in the next year. But I'm here to answer any questions that you have. I will also, in concluding my presentation, I'm going to also share with my screen a draft findings of fact. And we'd ask if you have a moment to take a look at it, or if you have any questions on it, and we'd ask if possible to consider this as well tonight, given our timeline. But again, that's the presentation of the Sommier open space, and thanks for your time.
Okay. All right. And pursuant that this is a public hearing considering this application for open space, we will open it to the public for any comments that are wanting to be made about this application. And do we have any? Mr. Palmer.
For the record, William M. Palmer. I'm really generally supportive of open space, or whether it's farm or open space or forest type applications. But I wonder about this one in regard to meeting the criteria. One of the things that seems strange about this one, and it's been a long time since I've reviewed these kind of applications, which the last time I did, I was a county employee in the Department of Community Development. But here's a situation where you've got a proposed open space for less than an acre, and I thought that was only allowable in urban areas. But assuming that it can also be applicable to rural areas, my concern, I guess, is related to the county assessor and how they can apply one tax rate to part of a parcel and another tax rate to another part of the parcel. Typically, if they're 5 acres, it could be, with a total of 10, you subdivide the parcel that's going to be an open space in a separate tract or a separate parcel number, and it's easy to apply the financial restrictions on assessment. But now you've got the assessor has to figure that out on a parcel that's not subdivided. So I guess one question is he creating an open space easement that would make the assessor's office a little bit, allow them to make a decision a little bit easier. But I didn't see that in my review of the staff report. So I don't know if that's what's happening or not. This one really seems strange to me, even though I'm generally supportive of it and have supported most open space tax applications in the past. But this one just seems a little strange to me.
Okay. And just for correction on your statement there, it is for more than 1 acre. It is for 3.17 acres.
I understand that, but that's if it's less than 5, that's the cutoff criteria usually for open space designation, whether it's open space, or forest or ag. But the criteria in the brochure anyway that staff put out says that it's can be less than 5 acres in urban area, but not necessarily in rural. But in an urban area, you can subdivide. But you can't in this case because he has less than 10 acres.
Okay. All right. That is the 3 minutes. Thank you for your comments, Mr. Palmer. Do we have any other comments? No. Okay. Colin, did you want to say something?
Just that he mentioned the easement, and I do think that applicants have the opportunity to propose that you can have a conservation easement as a factor in determining what rate or what percentage reduction you might have, but it's not, so it does happen. I don't know if it's typical, and it's not necessarily required. So we do, my understanding is that the assessor is able to record that 3.17 acres that they proposed and without the easement. And then that would run with the land, and be recorded that way. Nonetheless, that was the only response that I had.
Okay. All right. With no other comments being seen, we will close the public hearing at this time. And we will move to our deliberation, item G, in that. To start that, do we have a motion to approve the application for the open space? Commissioner Bean.
I make a motion that we approve the open space application.
Okay. Do I have a second? Commissioner Murphy, thank you. Okay. With that, do we open discussion now? Or deliberation on this. Commissioner Moll.
I just have a question, maybe curiosity more than anything, but I'm curious how the boundary of what would be part of the open space was determined, and specifically why the actual like pond feature wasn't included in that open space area.
Okay.
Yeah. I could provide a little, a bit of response to that. And it's a good point. I think that the general criteria is more about the presence of streams and wetlands, protecting the watershed and things like that. So they don't always directly align with where the critical areas actually are. The purpose of the open space being more to take that land for its value in multiple ways, for its protection of the critical areas, but also the vegetation, the rural aesthetic, and protect it kind of in continuity. So it doesn't always perfectly align with where the critical areas actually are, but they did provide that wetland certificate, and that's really helpful in our determination. The pond itself may or may not be considered in the open space category. It wouldn't be able to be developed either way, but it's not necessarily that it would be, that it would be, I guess, is the answer.
Okay. Commissioner Murphy.
Yeah, Colin, thanks for the presentation. I think if for no other reason than continuing Commissioner Mall's line of questioning, if for educational purposes, if not for any other, who delineated the boundary itself? Is it drawn by the applicant and or, I noticed things like it encroached in the 100-foot well setback versus going around it with the radius. I just found the boundary. Who drew the boundary, and then how do you decide? Is there a maximum amount? Because you couldn't put another house on this regardless, right? So should they have gone for more or less? Tell us a little more about how that goes, how that gets created.
It's the proposal is made by the applicant for delineating where the request is, and where a wetland would be delineated would have been from the habitat biologist, if that might be what you're asking as well. But the 3.17 acres is kind of what's, I guess there's no perfect standard for that, but it is what's appropriate for the site, given where the site features are. In this case, they have a developed site, they have a cleared area, so that would not be appropriate for the open space category. but the rest of it could be protected, and protected not just from residential development, but accessory dwelling units from other, removal of vegetation, any other kind of intensive use of the property, other than basically continue to exist as it is. And the applicants often work with the county ahead of time for their applications to understand the requirements better, and if they should be asking for a 50% or a 75% reduction, what features are on site. So I hope that gives a little bit of a better idea.
Yeah, if I could just add one piece, is there notice to title then so that can't be logged or the pond can't be filled?
Yes, there is. There would be something recorded and notice to title stating that, and that would follow the land as well. So even if it were to change hands or sold, that would remain as well. There is a procedure in place to have it removed in the future, but it's pretty burdensome and has penalties as well. So there would be something recorded with the land to ensure that.
Great, thank you.
Commissioner Beam.
This looks like a fairly straightforward application. My question is, since the paperwork was submitted on the 12th of January, why does it take a year to get through this process?
Yeah, well, a couple answers. I think typically these are considered towards the end of the year, and we would bundle them if we had multiple. It sounds like, two or three in a year is typical, one, two, or three. This one did also, I think, change hands a couple of times in review. So for those couple of reasons, I guess, but we do want to make sure that we line the process out ahead of time so we know that we can review these by the end of the year.
All right. Any other points, questions, or discussions?
We do have a hand raised by Mr. Diener.
Okay. Mr. Diener.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
In response to Commissioner Beam's question, I believe there's a reference, it's either in Washington Administrative Code or RCW, I do not remember which, that specifies when an application is received, it should go into effect the following calendar year.
Okay. I was just looking to be responsive to the public. They put it in and it sat until June before anything was done. And now we're up against a timeline at the other end saying we've got to get this done now.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's partially because we were waiting to see if there was going to be any last minute applications where we bundle all these together. In the past, we've actually, before the board, approved three at once, for example. That's essentially why.
Okay. Commissioner Lyason.
So if we approve it tonight and it gets before the county commissioners and is approved by the end of the year, would it go into effect January 1 of this next year?
If that question is for me, the answer is yes.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Okay. Any other questions, comments? Going once, twice, okay. All right, call for a vote. All those in favor of approving the application for open space, please say yes and raise your hands. Please keep your hands up until I've counted. One, two, three. And it's unanimous. Okay, so we have passed that. We do have, we can approve the finding of fact if everybody wants to take a moment and look at the proposed finding of facts that I believe Mr. Poff has provided.
And just as a note, we'll need two motions. We'll need a motion to consider the finding of facts at this meeting because it differs from the standard practice, and then another vote on whether or not to actually approve the findings themselves.
Okay.
Just so you know.
All right. So do I have a motion to consider approving or reviewing the, considering the finding of facts at this meeting? Commissioner Beam.
I make a motion that we consider the findings of facts at this meeting.
Okay, do I have a second? Commissioner Doubt. Okay.
Yes, so doubt
it? Right, doubt it.
Thank you.
Okay. All those in favor of considering the finding of facts at this meeting, please raise your hands and indicate with a yes. Unanimous. Okay.
I was just clarifying. I think the vote had to be unanimous to suspend the rules. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So with that approved, if we could have the finding of the facts put on the screen. Who has that? Mr. Poff, do you have that?
Yes, sorry about that. I can share my screen one more time.
Okay. And Commissioner Elias and Wally's finding.
Yeah, I move to approve the finding of facts as presented.
Okay. Do I have a second? Commissioner Beam. Okay.
Second.
All right. And did we get... There it is. Okay. Nice that it's one page. Okay. Any discussion on this or corrections on the finding of facts? No? Okay. So call for a vote. All those in favor of approving the findings of facts as presented, please raise your hands and say yes if you approve. It's unanimous. Okay. That closes our G, our action deal. And now we go to item H, deliberations, finding of fact for the Title 15 Flood Hazard Amendment. Mr. Kinley?
Good evening.
Evening.
All right, so as you know, we've already had our work study session on this topic, the Title 15 Flood Hazard Area amendments as being requested by Washington Department of Ecology and also FEMA. So we did that October 19th work study, and then we had a public hearing again on November 16th. Tonight, we have the opportunity to hear from you as you deliberate on the topic of Title 15. So I can share my screen. I will start a screen share of my PowerPoint. Got to get the right screen.
Right. There we go.
Okay. Now I have to find my controls. There we go. All right. So said Title 15, Flood Hazard Areas, just as a brief overview, just to refresh our memory since we've did this about 3 weeks ago, I guess. In October, we did our community assistance visit with the Department of Ecology. That included an inspection that they conducted about a year ago, maybe a little over a year ago. And then they came to us with a few examples of things they'd noticed in our jurisdiction. We had to respond to those inquiries at that point in time. The CAV this time looked like a virtual interview rather than an in-person visit. And they conducted a training on the Puget Sound biological opinion. And coupled with that was an audit of our permits. We provided a list of permits over the last 4 years, I believe it was, that were within the floodplain. From that, they took a sampling and they had some questions asked us to provide documentation on all those things, which we did. We've successfully made it through that portion of the CAV where we've responded to all of their questions and clarifications. So part of that was an update to Title 15 that they are requiring us to do in order for us to fall into alignment with the Washington State Model Ordinance from FEMA. This does have an impact overall on NFIP rates for those in flood hazard areas. So it's important for us to be in compliance with that model ordinance. So this is the process we went through, as I just mentioned. The work study session on October 19th started a public 30-day public comment period. We're going through CEPA review, and Department of Commerce has conducted or started their expedited review of the Title 15 ordinance. Public hearing on the 16th. We have not received any public comments to date, and the public comment period has closed. So there's at this point nothing for us to respond to on Title 15. So tonight we are here to do a deliberation on those. I do not have a findings of fact to share with you this evening. I was not able to get that in the time last week. I've drafted one, but thought there might be something from this evening that we need to respond to. So we will come back with that.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that. Yeah. Do I have a motion to approve the changes to Title 15 flood hazard zone? Commissioner Elias.
So moved.
All right. Do I have a second? Commissioner Murphy. Okay. All right. With that, all those, we have deliberation. All right. Do we have any comments on this proposed change to Title 15, the flood code? Going once, twice. Oh, Commissioner Lyson.
I'll just say it's pretty brief, and I appreciate the briefings we got from Assistant Director.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other comments? No? Okay. All those in favor of approving the Title 15 flood hazard amendments, please signal your yes vote by saying yes and raising your hands. One, two, six, seven. And it's unanimous. Okay, so that is approved. And I'm sure we will have the finding of facts for the next meeting.
Thank you, Commissioners.
Okay. With that, item I, the bike electric vehicle code. Melissa Shoemake.
Thanks. Give me just a moment to share my screen.
Okay.
Okay, so we have the bike parking and electric vehicle charging project. This work plan was the result of the non-motorized facilities committee presenting some suggested code language specifically for bike parking facilities to the board earlier this year. The board directed staff to develop a work plan that they approved in October. Basically, their thinking was on this, that they didn't want to miss any opportunities to have the bike parking and EV charging facilities as new development happens in the timeframe between when this gets adopted and if we were to wait until doing this with the comp plan, for instance. You know, that's a lot of new development that could take place in the time between now and then. So the scope here is for new construction and applicable redevelopment. Applicable redevelopment is to be determined during this code update process, what that actually will mean. It's going to apply in urban areas, rural, commercial, and industrial zones, and in the Lammards. We will establish minimum standards for bike parking and electric vehicle charging. And then we will also encourage the provision of additional facilities with incentives. Those incentives will also be determined throughout the code update process. The code will establish location, dimensional, material, design, numeric, and other standards as applicable. Currently, right now, the only real standard that applies for bike parking is that there needs to be one bike parking space, I believe, per 20 vehicle parking spaces. It doesn't say anything about where they be located or anything of that nature. And then the only electric vehicle standard currently is just in the newly adopted building code. So there's nothing in the county's zoning code about electric vehicle charging facilities. And then as needed, we will also revise or add definitions as the work progresses. So what we intend to do with this, aside from, you know, getting more bike parking and electric vehicle charging stations out there, it'll encourage healthy and resilient communities by increasing non-motorized and low or no emission transportation options, helping to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and therefore supporting Vision 2050, countywide planning policies, and the Kitsap County Climate Change Resiliency Assessment. It'll help improve public health outcomes with cleaner air and active transportation, and then also applicable goals and policies in the county's comprehensive plan that's currently adopted. So we've identified a whole slew of interested parties and key partners, including bicycle and electric vehicle users, gas station owners, the general public, obviously our elected and appointed officials, service providers, also including in their electric providers, obviously, community organizations and committees, and then obviously all of our different state, regional, tribal, and local governments. And then we've identified different outreach and participation methods. There'll be two surveys, one for the general public, one that's gonna be specifically developer focused so that we can really tailor what incentives are going to be the most useful and will actually be used. There'll be a kickoff presentation, a workshop group. One member from the Planning Commission would be very useful to be on that workshop group. So please think about who would like to be on that and contact me if you're interested. We'll have a project website. We'll offer consultations with department staff. We'll do targeted email notifications as well as announcements via gov delivery. There'll obviously be a public notice in the Kitsap Sun with our SEPA review. And then the public comment periods before you folks, as well as the board and public hearings. And then also as announcements go out with gift delivery, there'll also be social media posts as well. So we're basically in phase one right now, working on developing outreach and engagement materials, including those surveys. We'll get the project kickoff presentations going in January. And then in phase two, starting kind of in March, we'll develop an initial draft proposal via discussions with the workshop group based on the results of the survey and review of other jurisdictions' practices. I've already got that information from other jurisdictions provided by MRSC. And then we will also have consultations with community groups and workshops via briefings here with the Planning Commission to discuss that initial draft developed by the department and the workshop group. Then starting in July, we'll get into the analysis phase where we'll have our staff report, staff recommendation, and get the CEPA review and notice out there, and get the draft code language available for the public comment period. And then starting in October, we'll kick off the final draft proposal with public hearings and then get through the board process by the end of January. So it's pretty high level, but it's also a fairly compact project in all. So if there are any questions, I'm happy to chat about it.
Okay, thank you. Any questions, comments for Melissa this time? Commissioner Beam.
Is there any reason why you didn't list the RCW and the building code for the electric charging? The RCW is already in place and it should be part of the references, but particularly for the outreach.
Right. I mean, it's already existing. I didn't list it in here because it's mostly a broad overview. But yes, that's certainly part of the conversation. But we will definitely be going, you know, further than what the RCW requires.
Why?
So that we have additional electric vehicle charging facilities available for folks to use.
Okay. Commissioner Murphy?
On the first screen that you shared, you talked about, or maybe it wasn't the first, second, or third, the interested parties and the party that made the proposal. How does that come to be that one party makes recommendations to Kitsap County and now it's a work project?
Liz, do you want to speak to that a little bit more?
Sure. So the non-motorized committee, non-motorized facilities committee is actually an appointed body of the county. So this is similar to the planning commission. The commissioners do appoint representatives from various districts across the county to represent and support implementation of the county's non-motorized plan that's been adopted. And so that body is who worked on the initial recommendation, and that recommendation was forwarded on to the Board of County Commissioners. And then during that discussion, it was asked of the department to develop the work plan. In addition to, at that time, there were changes to the building code, which requires underground facilities to be installed for any parking lots. I believe it's more than 20 spaces, but does not necessarily require that the infrastructure itself be installed at this time. So that is one of the things that, as Melissa alluded to, we're trying to encourage that investment and not wait, given the fact that this is definitely an emerging trend and a direction that the state has headed in terms of encouraging conversion to electric vehicle fleets across and kind of migrating away from fossil fuel usage here. So that is kind of the origin of this particular code update. And as you all know, our work program here at the Department of Community Development is directed by the Board of County Commissioners. And so that is why this project is moving forward, because they have directed the department to proceed with these two elements and to recommend some alternative options to encourage and incentivize these facilities across urban and portions of rural Kitsap County.
Hey, Commissioner Lyason.
In regard to Mr. Palmer's comments earlier, I'm wondering if Liz or Scott or somebody could give us any indication of the magnitude of staff time in general related to this project versus site specific. I'm guessing site specifics would take a lot more staff time than this project, but I'm curious if you have any type of comparison.
Sure. So just like just like with any project that the department engages in, as it pertains to site-specific amendments in particular, Kitsap County Code does require us to maintain a catalog of suggested landowner-suggested amendments to zoning and land use designations. And the department is required to present that catalog to the board on an annual basis. And then it's their discretion whether or not they want to open up and consider those site-specific amendments. So earlier this year, the department did present a whole host of site-specific amendments. And at that time, the board indicated that they would wish to defer those suggestions to the 2024 comp plan, recognizing that it does require quite a bit of staff capacity to be able to review those. And it is a whole year-long process that requires multiple staff, just speaking from working through two of those annual amendment processes. And it's not always just limited to site-specific amendments. We could also consider things that would require text amendments to the comprehensive plan and or development regulations that may or may not be consistent with the existing comprehensive plan. So I would say that they're not apples to apples comparison in terms of workload capacity. And based on the board's direction to the department earlier this year, they deferred all of those requests that we had in the catalog to 2024. With that said, the department is planning to come before the Planning Commission in the very near future to talk about the kind of strategy and approach that we are embarking on as it relates to the upcoming comprehensive plan update, which is due on or before June 30th of 2024. And we do anticipate as part of that process and early in the development of that comp plan update that we will be requesting land use reclassification requests from property owners that would be analyzed as part of that update process. And our current timeline and trajectory on that would be actually seeking those landowner initiated requests as part of the 2024 work program. So again, this is going to take for the comp plan update. It's a multi-year effort, and we'll talk with the Planning Commission about that a little bit further, but just want everyone to know that those opportunities for property owners to initiate changes to their zoning, it's right on the horizon, and we'll be moving forward in the short term. So
thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Any other questions? Commissioner Beam.
Can you expand upon why we need to have county regulations on where and how many bike stands need to be placed? Shouldn't that be a function of the developer?
It actually is already a requirement of our code. So, you know, a new development is required depending on the size of the parking facilities associated with a development. There are already code requirements in place for bike parking facilities. In addition, it's consistent with the county's adopted non-motorized facilities plan, which does want to encourage alternative modes of transportation so that everyone doesn't always have to get in a car in order to make a vehicle trip somewhere. It also supports a whole host, as you see in the work plan that was distributed to the Planning Commission, of goals and policies that are currently adopted within both the Kitsap County Comprehensive Plan, in addition to the countywide planning policies, and also supported by multi-county planning policies as part of Vision 2050. So, you know, this is really an opportunity to implement those policies at a local level and encourage these alternative modes of transportation beyond just vehicles.
Any other questions? Commissioner Smith.
So I am interested in this project. I think Kitsap County can do a better job linking bicycle paths, walking paths, alternative transportation. There is a group of individuals that reside on Kitsap County, in Kitsap County, that are looking forward to these alternative modes of transportation. And so I'll be outreaching to Melissa to learn more about this project. I apologize, I lost connection in the middle of your presentations. So there may be some information I might need to revisit, but I will be in contact with you. Thank you.
Yeah, and I just want to reiterate, it's very specifically about basically on private property. So the bike parking and the EV charging facilities, things that are in the right of way, such as bike trails, that's really more up to Public Works to identify how to make make those better, essentially.
And I appreciate it's a step in the right direction. So
yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. Commissioner Lyason.
I was just going to say I concur with Commissioner Smith's comments.
Any other, Commissioner Murphy?
Yeah, to either Liz or Melissa, just with regard to, you know, probably the angle that Commissioner Beam is coming at this from, obviously we do have baseline rules, both in zoning codes and in the IBC, International Building Code, that do get, you know, tend to get, at least in the IBC, a little bit stricter and a little bit more forward thinking with every code book update, much like the Washington State Energy Code. So we also know that our state in general is fairly liberal thought when it comes to stuff like that. Do we have a sense of how much more, and I just for lack of a better word, how much more strict we plan to be above and beyond what the IBC and RCWs and zoning code already request that do have both of these considered?
Yeah, I think just speaking, and Melissa, feel free to hop in here if I misspeak in any way. I think the goal of the department is to establish kind of minimum standards consistent with how it's already outlined in code, but then clarify and provide some predictability on location and design. One of the things that the non-motorized committee found in their kind of research and review into this is that a lot of the bike facilities that have been installed as part of new development are not functional. You know, you can't even park a bike at them because they're shoved up against a wall and so you can't get the tire through. So really it's about functionality. And I think going above and beyond that is when where we start to get into the incentive realm and wanting to encourage going above and beyond those minimum standards. So I don't think the goal is to really add additional stringent standards, but really to clarify and provide that predictability and really address some of the circumstances that have been encountered as part of kind of research and how the existing codes have been implemented. And as it relates to vehicle charging stations as well, you know, you hit it on, you know, that this is part of the IBC and it's definitely a trend that's moving forward. So again, wanting to encourage and then incentivize the installation so that we really have a full suite of resources that folks can tap into as they move about our county and really encourage that we are providing these alternative modes of transportation. So I hope that answers your question, but I'm happy to expand upon it if necessary.
No, that's a very good answer for the preliminary phase we're in. Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome.
Commissioner Beam.
It might be useful when you're developing your public outreach if you include the report out from the committee and what the committee recommends.
Yeah, we can certainly do that. In addition to the fact that, you know, their recommendation was several pages long. And our goal is not to, you know, is to condense and try to format it in a way that's not seeming as though this is overly burdensome to the development community or those that are moving forward with projects on their sites. So I think there's opportunities to streamline what has been done, expand upon what has been done. And there's a lot of models out there. And part of the plan that Melissa and the team have pulled together is also encouraging participation from that non-motorized committee, having a representative on that work group that was mentioned to help craft the proposal that ultimately the Planning Commission and Board of County Commissioners will review during the public process. So certainly can provide that background context and research that was conducted in addition to for electric vehicle charging stations. There's model code out there that has been developed by, I believe it's the Department of Commerce as well. And, you know, is something that we can rely on in terms of how others have moved forward on these topic areas. So again, all of that will be part of the research and development of alternatives that ultimately the work group will help to refine before it moves forward to you all for consideration.
Okay. Any other questions, comments? No? Okay. Of course, who knows? Maybe that committee needs to go to Europe to study how they handle bikes. So that could be. Anyway.
I'm not sure we have the budget, unfortunately.
Yeah, I'll be on the committee if that's the case.
I was gonna say, now we know why Joe volunteered in the background to look in.
Hey, gotta try. But anyway, any other last comments on this? All right. Thank you, Melissa and Liz, on your presentation.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. That brings us to our item J, the second general public comment period. And I don't see any public attending us. Do we have anybody on phone? No? Okay. Yeah. We will close that comment period. All right. Now we are at Kilo. Time for the good of the order or commissioner comments. Do we have anybody that wishes to make comment? Okay. I will give you a couple of things to think about here. We are going to try the hybrid test meeting on the 14th. It would be great if you can attend either in person or online. I would emphasize.
Which would you prefer? Do we have any idea for how many are coming each way?
We have a mix. Most of the folks that have responded are going to be attending virtually. I know we have Danielle. Commissioner Douthat said she would come in person. So as long as we have some of each, and then I've recruited some staff members to help. I'll have someone there with me in the chambers, and then we'll also have someone offsite so they can be presenting. Because I just want to do a quick, it's not going to be super long and there won't be actually any content discussed or presented. I just want to make sure they can share screens, make sure you can all see screens. We'll practice different people wanting to speak, and Joe can check things out and see how he's going to run the show.
Good segue into. I would remind everyone that we're going to, when we move to the hybrid setup, we need to follow the Roberts rules closer. We do it fairly good. I appreciate how everybody is signaling when they want to talk and waiting until they're recognized. But we do need to make an extra effort because there's going to be people at the dais and then people on screen and that. So if you practice your waiting, you know, signaling you wish to speak and being recognized, that would be very helpful in that. Another topic coming up, not quite here, it's near and dear to Commissioner Eliason's heart. We will be having elections for the new president and vice president for next year in January. So like everyone to consider whether they'd like to participate or nominate someone. Commissioner Beam.
Do we have any idea who the new people are?
Not at this time.
Shouldn't they be part of the process for election?
Well,
elections take place regardless whether we're full or not full. This
right. Will, so. It's, yeah, it isn't the most perfect situation, but we will have to deal with what we have at the beginning of the year. And that, so just a reminder of, we'll do the usual short straws in January. Commissioner Mall.
How many openings will we have after the first of the year?
I believe Commissioner Lyason and Commissioner Beam's terms are up. I don't think we have anybody else. Let me look. Nope, that will be it. And Commissioner Murphy's term will be up in 2022. So we will see. So just two to be replaced at this time. And from my understanding, the commissioners have not really had enough time to consider new candidates to be appointed. And that. So we will have to deal with it when we come to January. And that. And let's see, is there any other comments? Anybody else have any? Commissioner Lyason.
I'd like to know if the current chairperson is thinking about being a re-election candidate as chairperson next year. If the vice chairperson's considering it. I've been where you guys are. Joe, you've done a fantastic job this year, and we'll see what happens. I won't get to vote in it next year, but it'd be nice to have the continuity. And I'm a little bit jealous because I was hoping to transition to in-person meetings. Might have to come to the test run just to be able to sit in the commissioner's chambers again.
Yeah.
Everybody ought to consider doing it. I know it's a lot of work, but staff is there to support you. And Joe, I would hope you'd consider doing it again. And same thing with Amy, if you don't, to move into it. Thanks.
Okay. Commissioner Mall.
I would definitely consider continuing to be vice chair if someone else wanted an experienced vice chair to their chair. I did discover the one time I was acting chair, it was a challenge to keep up with what was going on and also really feel engaged in the discussion at the same time. And I'm not sure that my multitasking skills are up to that long term, but I would be happy to support someone else. So if you're willing to be chair with an experienced vice chair, I've got you covered.
Yeah. Well, and to answer Commissioner Eliason's question, I am open to it. I don't know how the rest of the commissioners will feel about it, but we will see. So, but if you feel that you want to be on the cutting edge of all this fun, hey. Okay. And okay, with that, do I have, let's see. No, it's not Christmas yet, so we don't have to worry about that yet. So with that, do I have a motion to adjourn? Commissioner Bowe.
Motion to adjourn.
Okay, second. Commissioner Bean. Thank you. All those in favor of adjourning, raise your hand, say yes. It's unanimous. Okay. And we will hopefully see most of you on the 14th, but for sure on the 21st. All right.
Thank you.
All right.
Good night.
Everybody. Bye.